Real College Podcast is presented by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and is a production of Radio K.
You are tuned in to another episode of Real College Podcast, Quarantine Edition. I'm this week's host, Casey McCabe, taking over from Nathan, who graduated this semester. A big shout out to Nathan, Ben, Darby, and every single member of our graduating Radio K and Golden Gopher family. We're all very proud of you. As our virtual semester comes to an end, all of us here at RCP are facing the transition from school life to summer life, and even with finals over, our work has not stopped. I myself recently returned to my apartment in Minneapolis after visiting home in Madison for a few weeks. I was lucky enough to return to the cities right as the weather became gorgeous, and for a few days I forgot about all my troubles. I spent most of my time outside with my roommates and almost none studying for finals, a balance that's kept me pretty happy. As your go-to arts and culture podcast, we are here to make both quarantine life and the end of finals more enjoyable for you. This episode, we have another disc of quarantine-themed content coming your way. Be sure to stick around. To start things out, we will hear from producer Zoe Challenger with some quarantine cooking.
While it is a necessity the same as sleeping and keeping on track with the trials of Joe Exotic and Carol Baskin, the act of feeding your body is naturally exciting. The ceremony doesn't need to be dampened by the repetition of dull microwavable meals just to keep on going with the motions. Your Instagram stories might be filled with fellow college students praising their sourdough masterpieces, but considering the sudden shortages of starter and yeast, you might need to compromise your culinary-related desires. Three recipes that I'll be recommending today are Kwani's French Toast Sandwich, Zoe's Tofu Scramble, and the classic Cacio e Pepe.
Your shopping trips have probably gotten larger than they were before, so you probably have all of the ingredients, if not most of them, that you will need to make the recipes that I'm going to be talking about today. However, these are some things that I've added to my shopping list. Eggs or firm tofu as a vegan substitute, garlic, onions of all kinds, broccoli, kale, or any other leafy green, garbanzo beans, veggie stock, rice, pasta of your choice, frozen veggies, peanut, almond, and or cashew butter, jam of your choice, bread of your choice, and mushrooms. When you're looking for a sweet comfort breakfast, look no further than Kwani's French Toast Sandwich. To make Kwani's French Toast, you'll need 4 slices of bread, 1/4 cup of milk or non-dairy milk for my lactose intolerance, 1 egg, 1/2 teaspoon of cinnamon, the nut butter of your choice, the jelly of your choice, and, this is optional, but 1 teaspoon of vanilla extract. Start by beating the egg, cinnamon, and vanilla in a shallow dish. Stir in the milk afterwards.
Next, take a slice of bread and then dip it in the egg mixture. After that, place it in a greased nonstick pan and fry it up until it's golden brown. Repeat this with the other 3 slices.
After you've fried up all 4 slices of bread, you're ready to make the sandwiches. Take your nut butter and spread it on 2 slices of French toast, and then do the same with jelly. Once you're done, use the slices to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. You can feel free to drizzle some maple syrup or some powdered sugar on top, but aside from that, you're all done. If you are seeking something savory, I offer you my personal tofu scramble recipe. You will need 1 block of firm tofu, 1/2 of an onion, 2 cloves of garlic, veggies of your choice, but I personally choose mushrooms, peppers, garbanzo beans, and broccoli. You will need kale or any other leafy green, 2 to 3 teaspoons of veggie stock, salt, pepper, paprika, red pepper flakes, and if you'd like, turmeric for an eggier taste. In my experience, I've found tofu scrambles to be pretty forgiving, considering they usually end up okay in the end. I usually start off with diced onions and garlic in a greased pan. You can grease your pan using either vegetable oil or any vegan butter of your choice. After that, I usually throw in the mushrooms, peppers, and garbanzo beans in order for them to get a bit charred. After that, I throw in the broccoli and saute it for about a minute or two. Then, using about a teaspoon of water, I throw it in the pan and I cover it with a lid for it to steam. I steam the broccoli for about 2 minutes, then proceed to season the sauteed vegetables with salt, pepper, and paprika. If I'm using kale as my leafy green, I would toss this in here. Kale takes longer to cook, so I would let it do its thing. Before the kale is completely wilted, then I'll crumble in the tofu. If you decide to use spinach or any other leafy green, put that in after you crumble the tofu in. Before the scrambling begins, toss in the red pepper flakes, and if you're using it, as much turmeric as you desire. Then start scrambling away. Once you combine the tofu with the sauteed veggies, then you're all done. That's your tofu scramble. I like to eat tofu scrambles for breakfast on its own or in burritos or with rice for dinner. Yeah, it's a very versatile dish.
The last dish that I have for you is for a hearty, comforting dinner, the classic cacio e pepe, or in other words, the adult mac and cheese. To make this recipe, you will need the pasta of your choice. It is recommended that you either use thick spaghetti or bucatini or gnocchi, but I cannot stop you if you do decide to use elbow macaroni. You will also need 2 tablespoons of unsalted butter, Parmesan, or a vegetarian substitute of Parmesan cheese, because if you did not know, Parmesan cheese is not vegetarian. You will also need 1 tablespoon of black pepper, no more than 1 cup of pasta water, because you should always add pasta water to your sauces when making a pasta dish. And this is optional, but highly recommended for some extra flavor, some olive oil. Start by cooking your pasta in some salted boiling water and follow the directions on the box to know how long to cook it for it to be al dente. Be vigilant that you do not overcook it. If you happen to have fresh Parmesan cheese, this is your time to grab a grater and grate it finely. However, if you do not have fresh Parmesan cheese, that is perfectly fine. Toss in the butter, water, cheese, black pepper, and then drizzle in some olive oil, mix it all together, and you're all done. That's it. I hope these recipes will bring comfort to the mind, body, and soul. Eating good for Real College Podcast, this is Zoe Challenger.
Although quarantine has drastically changed classes for all of us here at the U, the effects have been felt across all levels of education. Here is producer Ben Hallam with a report on how Corona is changing education.
One of the biggest impacts of the lockdowns and closures attendant to the coronavirus pandemic will be on America's school children. This is the first time many teachers are teaching classes online, and anyone who's involved can tell you that the learning is not the same. To find out more about how schools are adapting to the coronavirus lockdowns, I spoke to my mom, a preschool teacher in Rockton, Illinois, about what she's doing to teach her young students during this pandemic.
Well, I've been pretty much sending my students a daily lesson that includes some reading activities, math activities, gross motor, and some STEM activities. And then I read them a daily story and have a short chat or activity or a follow-up that they can do after my story, like rhyming or counting. Each week we get together and have meetings. I use the Google Hangouts so that everybody can get together and talk, and I might have a theme. I have to focus on keeping my lessons easy, simple, so that they can do these lessons at home and not expect them to buy anything special or use a lot of special props that they might not have at their house.
Mrs. Hallam said that even if the learning is not the same, the point is just to keep school at the forefront of these children's minds.
I just want them to keep on a schedule, like the thought that, you know, I'm still doing school, so that they are keeping fresh with concepts. And at my age, it would be just, you know, some letters, numbers, other things that I introduced to them in preschool. It's become more of a review, reviewing what we've already learned at school, not being able to have any kind of interaction with them while I'm giving the lessons has been quite a challenge. And I have to be hopeful that a family member, an older sibling, a grown-up in their house is able to understand the lessons I've given them so that they can teach them at home.
To find out more about how local schools are adapting to these challenges in the Twin Cities, I spoke to Maiju Lochong-Vu, an assistant director at the Office of Teaching and Learning for St. Paul Public Schools. She said that one of the first challenges was determining how long the school day should be and how much time students should be spending in front of a computer.
Because now you take what you would normally do, you know, 6.5 hour school day. Are we expecting students to be online for that amount of time, or what is that going to look like in St. Paul? So at the elementary, we're averaging around 2 to 2.5 hours of instruction per day. And then the online component is anywhere between 1 to 2 hours. So our students are not expected to be online the full 2, 2.5 hours. It's really, you go online to understand and know what the lessons are. And then it might require me to go outside and do exercise or go look for shapes and then videotape and permit that back through Schoology and Seesaw. Grade 6 through 8, we made a recommendation of 2 to 3 classes per day on an average 3 to 4 hours of instruction. And then for high school, it's 3 to 4 classes per day, 4 to 5.5 hours of instruction per day for high schoolers.
One of the biggest challenges in doing school from home is the inequity in outcomes that can result from students' differing home environments. Assistant Director Lo Chung Vu spoke a little bit about what St. Paul Public Schools has been trying to do to prevent this difference from becoming too large.
We have families who are homeless. Parents are still having to report to work because they're essential workers. Do you think about the disruption of this whole COVID-19 and the lives of our families? How do we design our lessons in a way that is going to be equitable for all of our students? There might be a family with multiple children at home where the older sibling becomes the primary caretaker during the day because maybe mom and dad still have to go to work. And so in St. Paul, we decided to, when we launched distance learning, we launched with asynchronous learning. The lessons are flexible where students can access material anytime during the day and submit their work anytime during the day, and they're not going to be penalized for that.
Despite all their efforts, Assistant Director Lo Chung Vu said that without the social-emotional connection that teachers can forge in person with students, combined with the difficulty of learning the new routine of online learning, students simply won't be learning as much as before, even if it's still important to have them in school and learning something.
In terms of just offering academics, what we are finding that what I would normally be able to accomplish in a 50-minute period, I need to scale that back. Students are learning this new ritual and routine of distance learning. One of the things I've said to teachers is, what you would normally accomplish face-to-face in a 50-minute lesson, cut that in half, and then cut that in half again. And that is going to be your focus. Either we provide some instruction, or the alternative is that there's no instruction, and so students would just be sitting at home.
The shift to online learning has been a difficult one for teachers and students, and it's one impact of COVID-19 we may still be feeling years down the line. Schools in America are traditionally seen as a great equalizer, because all students, no matter where they come from, are placed in the same environment with the same teachers. But when you're doing school from home, that's simply not the case. When these lockdowns end, America's teachers, like everyone else, will be faced with the challenge of making up for lost time. For Real College Podcast, I'm Ben Howell.
Murder hornets.
Murder hornet. The Asian giant hornet, also known as the murder hornet.
Murder hornets.
The murder hornet.
If coronavirus wasn't enough, the media has been awash with reports of murder hornets in the United States. Despite their small size, the Asian giant hornet, aka the murder hornet, has created quite the media buzz. To see if murder hornets really live up to the hype, I talked to Jeff Hahn, an entomologist for the University of Minnesota Extension Program. Hahn says that things are getting blown out of proportion.
Asian giant hornet was found in Washington State last December. Just to the north in British Columbia, it had been found in the fall time, including a nest. They eradicated the nest, or at least they hoped they did. And now they're taking kind of a wait-and-see attitude this spring. New York Times published an article about it. I don't think anyone has seen a live one since December. And it kind of got everyone all stirred up. You know, kind of one thing led to another. And now everyone's kind of talking about it.
While talking with Hahn, he underlined the fact that it is very unlikely the hornets will ever make it to Minnesota.
We never want to take an invasive species lightly. You know, every step possible, you know, has been taken out in the Pacific Northwest between Washington State and British Columbia. But at the same time, the risk to us here in Minnesota and other areas of the country is pretty small. But because these things are native to Asia, you know, they definitely need to hitch a ride, you know, to get to North America, you know, and to get from there to the Midwest, you know, would even be a more kind of tremendous feat for them.
To get an idea of why people in Minnesota are so concerned about these so-called murder hornets, I spoke to Jessica Peterson, an entomologist for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. Mrs. Peterson explained why people in Minnesota are concerned about murder hornets.
It's a new introduced species to North America from Asia, of course, the Asian giant hornet. And it's concerning to folks because it does kill bees. And especially Minnesotans here care a lot about our bees. So it could do some harm. And it's a painful sting, as I've heard. I've, of course, never been stung by one, but I'm here. It's quite a painful sting.
Although Asian giant hornets have killed a few people and other wild bees, according to Ms. Peterson, they are a bigger problem for the state's captive bee population.
I think we don't necessarily know that they would attack our wild bees. So in Minnesota, part of my job is to survey the wild bees in Minnesota. We have about 450 species of bees. And I guess the good news is it's probably unlikely that they would attack our wild bees. The more probable problem, if they were to arrive here in Minnesota, is that they seem to attack, you know, managed honeybee hives.
For those listening who are concerned about possible murder hornets in their area, Jeff Hahn has these words of advice.
This has been in the media a lot, and it's really gotten people's imaginations, you know, really going. But the reality is this is not an important threat, at least not at the moment. Some people have even wondered about going outside and just do what you would do otherwise and don't even think about an insect like this. You know, if you want to cross your T's and dot your I's, you can go to the University of Minnesota Extension website, type in hornets, and the article we have will be the first thing that pops up. That will have pictures and will answer questions.
Reporting for Radio K's Real College Podcast, I'm Casey McCabe. For those of us still here on campus, access to Boynton is essential for maintaining our health. Here's producer Tosin Fasimo with a report on how Boynton has adapted in order to continue to serve students.
As the COVID-19 pandemic continues, healthcare providers have had to adapt to the situation by changing how they offer their services. Many changes have taken place at Boynton Health, where University of Minnesota students and staff go to receive medical care. Their services range from general things like urgent care to more specific ones, like physical therapy. To discuss the ongoing changes to patient care, I called Dave Golden, Boynton's Director of Public Health and Communications.
We're now fairly busy, I mean relatively busy, with COVID-19 testing. So literally we meet people in their car or up front, we'll do a swab there, that, in other words, take a sample and get it submitted. And so any symptomatic person can get tested at Boynton. And we're also testing the contacts of sick healthcare workers or first responders.
Dave explained that Boynton services aren't limited to just those who are COVID-19 patients.
Other folks that need care can come in via telehealth, and it's working out amazingly well that they've got a HIPAA secure, you know, type of Zoom site, and they're literally seeing primary care patients with folks, and like there's a lot they can do. So that's a big change for us. So if people are wondering if they should be seen, they can just call us at this number, 612-625-7900, and there they can talk to a nurse that can help assess and figure out, you know, should they be seen.
Boynton has also begun offering services for patients via telehealth, which allows for the transmission of health services through electronic devices.
Mental health, they're operating pretty much at full speed. I mean, but they're doing virtually everything via telehealth. We do have some on-site urgent care visit slots and stuff. Couple people on-site, you know, every day. But otherwise, no, they've been really, really busy with telehealth. So same thing for a lot of our other providers. Physical therapy, they're seeing patients virtually as well. There's a lot that they can do with patients and show them how to do exercises, all that kind of stuff. That's all Zoom. Nutrition's going the same way.
The pharmacy has also been able to use technology to limit face-to-face time between patients and Boynton employees.
In fact, I just had to stop by the pharmacy this morning to pick up my own prescription. It's curbside. There's a little app you can put on your phone to get your prescription refilled, and then you call them when you get to Boynton. You just park out front, and they come out to your car and drop off your script. It's great. So I just used it last week and this week, I guess. So I was impressed with it. But you also can order over-the-counter medications. So we're working on getting more of that information up. But Boynton has super cheap over-the-counter meds. A lot of times if you need, just regular, you need like Tylenol or something else, like just something that you'd normally buy over-the-counter, they tend to have it much less. It costs a lot less than the local pharmacies.
But not all departments at Boynton have been able to make the switch to virtual services.
We have a full dental clinic, and so dentistry has really been impacted huge, so they're only seeing, emergency cases and a lot of their work. It's really high risk because a lot of their work stuff gets aerosolized. And so that means you really got to be careful if you're doing any kind of dental procedure, and it really has to be necessary. And so we have been doing oral surgery at Boynton for patients that really need it. We have an oral surgeon that works there too. It's a full service dental shop. They do literally, everything except for orthodontia or braces. We also are doing the food pantry. Instead of being open, normally the Nutritious You food pantry would be open for 3 days per month at the end of every month. And that's now open 7 days a week where people can order food, and then it'll be ready for pickup is the thing. So they can swing by Kaufman and pick up their bag of food. They also, given this time, can order more than what they would normally order as well to kind of get through. And then for students that have difficulty getting to Kaufman, like either they're sick or just can't get there, we've partnered with Metro Mobility. They've been underutilized now during the shutdown. So they made the offer, hey, we'd be willing to deliver food pantry items or bags to folks, and they are. It's great.
For students who are graduating this spring, Boynton services are still accessible over the summer.
If you're a student in spring, like, degree seeking, paying fees like normal type student, you can be seen at Boynton all summer long under those same conditions. Like, your fees are still intact until August when fall kicks in for fall fees. So, if you're at home and your regular provider requires a copay or something like that, you don't have to do that. You can still use Boynton and still have the same deal with no out-of-pocket for, most services, like under the fees and other than like pharmacy, dental, eye, some of those, but people can take advantage of that as well too, especially if they've been holding off on some care too, and they want to be seen, after the end of the semester. That's just fine. They're enrolled in spring. They're good to go straight through the summer, which also is a good deal. And same thing if you're on the student insurance plan. That's, again, year-round coverage, so that takes you through summer as well.
Before we ended our call, Dave remembered one other form of testing that is available at Boynton.
Oh, I didn't think of another one. We are doing at-home STI testing, where we're sending out ways to collect samples in advance, and then students can bring those in if they want to be tested for some STIs, primarily chlamydia. And so that's another thing to know about. We just started that recently, and that seems to be going pretty well too. So you can call in, and then they can get set up there for providing a sample at home, and then we'll send out the vial and two instructions, and then they bring it in.
For more information on how to receive care at Boynton, go to boynton.umn.edu. With Real College Podcast, I'm Tosin Fasima.
From all of us here at Real College Podcast, we hope that your finals went smoothly and that you stay happy, healthy, and connected. Signing off for Real College Podcast Quarantine Edition, I'm Casey McCabe.